This is the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Jenny Beck Esme, editor-in-chief of Feminem. Next up on our Fix 19 podcast content, we have a great talk from Dr. Emily Spiroli called On the Frontlines of Climate Change. Emily is a current third-year emergency medicine resident at the University of California, San Diego. Yep, you heard that right, a resident taking the Fix stage, and she was fantastic. She is a passionate climate activist, and we were thrilled to have her share this passion with the Fix audience. I hope you enjoy.
But thank you guys so much for listening to me and listening to this topic that I'm pretty passionate about. I've been so inspired by all the speakers before me today, and a lot of them have actually alluded to one thing that really resonates with me in our profession, and this is the oath that we took, the oath to first do no harm. And this is one of my favorite things about our profession, but I do feel like there's a bit of a blind spot that we need to address. And I feel a sense of urgency in kind of letting you all know about this critical opportunity for us to carry out our oath. And in 2015, The Lancet said that our response to climate change is one of the greatest public health opportunities of the 21st century. And it really boils down to something very simple. For humans to live happily and healthily, the place in which they live must be healthy and habitable to support generations to come. And this is the importance of environmental sustainability and its relevance to our profession. So, when I told my dad I was going to give a talk on the intersection between climate change and healthcare, he had an interesting response, and this is his actual words. So we have all of us have one in our family, guys. Like, it's usually some drunk uncle or something. It's like, you know, going to say stuff like this. So, you know, at that point I called him, and I said, "Dad, like, what?" You know. And he's like, "Climate change and healthcare?" He's very Italian-American. "What are you treating polar bears in the emergency department?" And I was like, and then I thought about it. I was like, you know what? Actually, I think this time he may actually have a point. If polar bears are living beings negatively affected by climate change and pollution, then we are treating polar bears in the emergency department. Polar bears are kind of like climate refugees. Patients coming for care after being affected by a climate event are climate refugees. I mean, like, he has a point for once, you know? And this actually reminds me of my very first climate refugee case that I had as a resident, which I'd like to share with you in a series that I like to call my polar bear cases. So, polar bear case number one. It was day three of a heat wave in San Diego, and the air outside felt like I was choking on hot dust. I mean, I'm from New York originally. I had never experienced a dry heat like this before in my life. I remember running into work just covered in sweat. I was sweating from places that I didn't even know I had at this point. And I rush in, and my attending, he just runs over to me, and he's like, "Go get the airway box now and meet me in the resuscitation room for a stroke code." So I did what all junior residents do, and I immediately forget all medicine at that point. Like, okay, I'm ready. What is an airway? Like, what? So I remember where the airway box is. There's like 10 nurses being, it's over there. Okay, so I go get it, run to the room, and I see the EMS people, and they're, you know, just this flurry of resuscitation, and all I can really catch is 91-year-old female, temp of 107, and a GCS of 3. At that point, that was the highest temperature I'd ever heard any human have. And I thought, there is no way this is compatible with life in a 91-year-old female. What had happened was that her electric wheelchair had malfunctioned in the heat, and she was stranded on a sidewalk for an unknown amount of time. Somehow, she still had a pulse and was breathing, so we did what ER doctors do. We assessed the emergency, resuscitated her, we cooled her, and she actually had a good outcome. She was admitted to the ICU, and she ended up going home a few days later back to her family, essentially at her baseline. But this experience was my first true encounter where a climate change-related event outside directly affected one of my most vulnerable patients. And me, my ER team, my hospital, we were on the front line of dealing with that day. And I had a polar bear in my emergency room, and I didn't even know it, right? So this experience inspired me to dig a little bit deeper, and I wanted to get more savvy. And I wanted to learn more about heat waves. And I got some literature done. I looked at some literature done by the Scripps Institute of Oceanography, which is like the mecca of climate science in San Diego. And after reading about all the horrible patient cases and outcomes and all the morbidity and mortality of heat waves in the prior 15 years, one thing they said to me was very striking. They said, yet the majority of impactful heat events were not accompanied by a heat advisory warning from the National Weather Service. And this gave me pause. Like, what do you mean there was no warning? And then it occurred to me, maybe we are letting other professions do our job for us, and we don't really have time for that. You can imagine if a heat advisory warning had come from the healthcare sector. Isn't this as important as healthcare providers or officials warning the public about a possible measles exposure? And of course, all professions play an extremely important role in this issue, but I'm pretty sure ours is maybe the only one who took an oath to protect and preserve the health of humanity. And what we say matters and is heard. But what the climate experts say matters too. They tell us that increasing emissions in the atmosphere leads to higher concentrations of particulate matter and higher global temperatures, leading to worse health outcomes. I mean, the evidence is just very clear at this point. And another thing I learned, and I was shocked, was how much our workplace is actually contributing to the problem. If the healthcare sector were a country, we would rank 13th in the world for our emissions production. The United States healthcare sector produces 8 to 10% of total US greenhouse gas emissions. That puts us ahead of the entire United Kingdom. Now, this reminds me of another polar bear case, which I'll say it from a different perspective, and it might be more familiar to you, in polar bear case number 2. You've just gotten ROSC on a patient and run a code, and you're looking at your patient care area. Your respiratory therapist is running in with their vents. Your intern is throwing in a line. And you take a step back and you look at the room, and there's plastic everywhere. Tubes, drapings, bags, wrapping, packaging, just all over the place. Latest estimates show that one active hospital bed produces 29 pounds of waste per day. That's 5.3 tons of waste per year for one active hospital bed. And like you, I was shocked to learn this information. I mean, we're supposed to be a place of healing, and we took an oath to first do no harm, and I was just shocked by these statistics. These polar bear cases and so many others help depict what I mean when I say we're on the front line of this problem, and we can be on the front line of the solution, and you actually have incredible powers to help us lead the way towards solutions. And actually, a lot of my previous speakers here have already alluded to them. The first one is your trusted physician voice. And the second is your medical knowledge. We can speak to the medical impacts of all of these climate change and pollution-related events. You have seen your patients with COPD and asthma struggling to breathe on days when the air quality is terrible. You know about the dangers of vector-borne diseases and food and waterborne illnesses. You have seen patient families displaced and injured from superstorms. You see every single day how your patients are affected by changes in the environment, and in turn, how our workplace is actually contributing to the problem. So where do we go from here? What's the next step? The first step that we can take is help healthcare transition to climate smart healthcare. And this is a really fancy term, so you guys are all in the know now, okay? Studies have shown that hospitals, studies by the World Bank, so not just, you know, random people, studies by the World Bank have shown that hospitals who take action towards mitigating and decreasing their carbon footprint are actually more resilient and provide higher quality patient care in the face of a climate emergency. This appreciation for how mitigation leads to resilience is called climate smart healthcare. And I'd like to end my talk today by sharing with you a couple quick tips that you can do tomorrow on shift, even tonight, once you are working tonight, right? We got the night shift. Quick things that you can do tomorrow to start leading the healthcare sector towards the change that we need. The first thing you can do is to join a green team. There are thousands of hospitals all over the world and hundreds of hospitals in the United States that have actually won awards for their green efforts. Join these green teams. These green teams, there's people from all over the hospital on these teams. You'll be rubbing shoulders with people you generally never speak to, which is actually a really awesome experience. Share your cases with them. Share your experiences of being on the front lines. Share what you witness happening in your workplace with them. They can help you do things like write a letter to your executives, explaining to them why it's clinically important to divest from fossil fuels. And you know what? They can help you write a letter to anybody explaining to them why it's clinically important to divest from fossil fuels. They need our trusted voices on these teams. And I know this because I'm the only physician on my team, and I'm a resident, you guys. So join a green team. The second thing you can do is to reduce your impact and lead by example. There are many, many ways to do this, and you can get really creative with it. But two things that you can start doing tomorrow are e-prescribing, so ditch the paper. I don't want to see any more paper. We don't need that, you guys. And decreasing what you put in the red bag waste containers. Red bag waste is 20 times more energy intensive to process than regular waste. And it's studies have shown that 80 to 95% of what we put in there actually doesn't have to go in there. It's much more detrimental to the environment to have this. Most hospitals have their own guidelines on what goes in there, but usually it's just bodily fluid-soaked items, blood-soaked items. You really don't have to put just blood-tinged things in there, okay? These are just a couple of things that you can do. There are incredible organizations out there who are already working on this, and you do not have to reinvent the wheel. There's a few here. Take a picture of the slide. This is for your reference. I'm part of all these groups. I don't get any endorsements from them. I'm poor. I'm a resident. Like, there's literally, they're just awesome groups to be in. And me, I am your resource. I am your ally, although I don't have any money, but I'm your ally in this. I'm all ready to go in. And in fact, I'll let you in on a secret. And my mom is sitting in the front row here, and she can attest. Hi, Mom. That I was actually born to do this, was I not? I was. And it's because my birthday is April 22nd, Earth Day. So if that doesn't give me some street cred, you too. So you come here with me too now. So we're all here. Awesome. So I'm your resource. Here are amazing things, amazing organizations for you. My final thoughts, I'd like to address the ER doctors in the audience directly. Who better to lead? Who is more calm, collected, and prepared in the face of an emergency than the people who were trained in emergencies and wrote the book on disaster medicine? We are in the middle of a public health emergency, and we are also in the perfect position to be leaders in changing the world in the way that we need it to be changed for us, for our patients, and for our future generations. This is a generation that will only know a world where climate change is directly threatening their health and prosperity. We have an incredible opportunity before us, and I hope I've given you a place to start today. So thank you for listening.